Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
Well, greetings and welcome yet again to another episode of Talk Straight. It's your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. Grateful for each and every one of you who will join us tonight. And we hope that you will be able to follow us on this extended portion of our topic from Tuesday night. Now, during part one of this two-part discussion, we held what I consider to be rather robust conversation germane to the nature, the purpose, and even the need for a pedagogical focus for urban American progress. Now, announced then that in part two, we'd really be focused and dig into the details of an action plan. And so tonight, as promised, we will offer a construct and suggest an action plan, that has the promise of being transformative. In fact, transforming lives to improve on social, economic, and political conditions even of people who have a common set of problems and who are residents in urban America. Our topic, Urban American Pedagogy, Part 2, Plan of Action. That's what we're talking about tonight, 657-383-0944. That is the number to call. And consistent with our normal practice, when we have a topic, I will offer a monologue, and this monologue will provide context for our conversation for the next about hour and 50 minutes or so, roughly. Okay? It is July the 29th, 2021. That means, beloved, that the seventh month is about gone. Now, we got 5 more months to go before the year is gone. Some of that's good, some of that's bad. But what it keeps reminding us of is that time is moving on, all right? So we should know that there's little time for foolishness, right? No time to waste. Urban American Pedagogy, Part 2, Plan of Action. That's what we're talking about tonight. The text that I'd like to offer for your consideration, the biblical text, is found in 2 Timothy, the second chapter, in the 15th verse. It reads like this: study to show thyself approved of God, a workman that needeth not be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. A workman that needeth not, in other words, when you demonstrate yourself, when you present yourself in business, personal affairs, social affairs, you don't have to feel belittled, to be ashamed, and you should expect to be taken seriously. But who's going to teach that? And what method will be used to? Now, in the interest of ensuring proactive change for urban American families and children in those families and the communities who struggle with things like poverty, substandard, poor education, crime and violence, social despair, and even economic hardships, it's important that there be some sort of outline of a specific goal and objective and action plan to measure that success. Now, that's part of strategic planning. So sometimes people jump in head first and they say, we're going to do. They get emotional, get excited and pumped up, but there is no end game. They cannot articulate to you how do we measure success of our efforts. Okay? So tonight what we're going to be talking about is, the other night we described what pedagogy is. We talked about aspects of it. We talked about how there are at least three different approaches to pedagogical strategy, okay? And we're going to make reference to them again tonight a little bit. It's integrated in our discussion. But more importantly, it's important that the process of teaching and learning, which is education, that we be very specific about what is it that we're teaching, to whom, what's the content material, right? And how are we teaching that in a way that we can be effective? So the latter will only be achieved, that being identifying positive goal, objectives, and plans of action when you apply these principles of strategy or approach. And this is kind of what we talked about the other night. You must be firm. There must be firmness. What do you mean, Doctor? Firmness involves taking a solid stance, not wavering back and forth. A solid stance to the point of unyielding. This is it. This is what we expect. And this is how we're going to go about doing it. There is no second guessing, no coming back. And Johnny come lately decides because he got up late, he or she decided that they want to change. No. We're firm about what we're going to do. Right? And we hold these truths to be self-evident for us. We're not changing. Now, this is met in part by subscribing to what we discussed the other day in terms of your method of teaching, the critical pedagogy, which assumes that the lessons being taught and the information that's being taught should be backed up by some sort of organized power structure or defense organization. What we say we're going to do has support, legal support, financial support, social, moral support. You understand what I'm saying? We got to be firm about that. Now, I know how hard it is for some of my people to stick with something when they start something. And then there are people who really don't want to see anything happen. So they're quick to come and make excuses and try to pick it apart. When you're firm, we can achieve those goals that we set. We can meet the objectives, and our actions can lead to positive results. when your heart and you take this solid position, you've got to make sure that whatever you're doing, it is fair to everybody. Now, as I said earlier, what we don't want is to set ourselves up as an organized group to allow everybody and their mama to come in, pick it apart, and before you know it, you don't have anything anymore. But you got to be fair. What do you mean by fair, doctor? That involves showing, demonstrating that there is impartiality in the process. Huh? Everybody is operating from an honest position. We all want the same thing. And our efforts are free of any self-interest, individualized interest. See? We talked about political base, but the power is not for a handful or one individual. It's to empower all of us. There is no prejudice involved in what we're doing. There's no favoritism. But we're all playing by established rules that can get us to a point where embracing these rules, we can see success. Everybody follows the rules that we set. Now, when we talk about fairness, that is facilitated by the dialogic learning approach. And this is where we intentionally see to it that the discourse within our communities, within our families, within our neighborhoods, is driven by truth, by the facts that are on the ground within your neighborhood. Not what somebody else has done or they think or theorize across the country, up the block. But in your neighborhood, this is what's real. Let me be very clear. If little Johnny is the cause of broken windows, huh? Trouble and mayhem, let's be honest about that. Do we want to throw Johnny out with the bathwater? No, we really don't. But Johnny needs to be dealt with by the community. Hello, somebody. We're going to do it fairly, right? We know Johnny's mama loves him. We love him, too. But Johnny's going to have to straighten up and fly right, or there will be consequences. But we will do that fairly because we're firm about what we're trying to do. So you see how we looked at the critical aspect of strategy, and we included the dialogic portion of it as well. We're talking about being firm, fair, and lastly, consistent. Consistent. If you're going to help people that are broken, that are down, that are out, and who say, I don't know what to do, clean with them. You got to be firm with them. You got to be fair and consistent. What's this consistency, doctor? Well, when we talk about consistency, we're talking about ensuring compliance. Listen to the word, compliance, right? Compliance to the function of the structure, the discipline, the order that has been established for the community. Everyone must comply. Not sometimes, all the time. If we don't have that, what we have is unfairness, you see. We have a situation where our efforts are not firm. So when we talk about consistency, we are talking about the compliance with the established order that we have. Now, typically, that which is necessary for the sake of ensuring accuracy of our outcomes and even fairness is the need to make sure that everyone is consistent and what we do is consistent. And we see that in our outcomes. Remember I talked about earlier, what is the end game? Well, whatever you start on should be reflected in how you end with success. Now, this is met largely by taking the student centered. And what it does is it keeps the focus, in this case, the student, not just children, but it's the parents and it's the members of the neighborhood, of the block, of the community. The focus is on them as learners. Did you get that? See, oftentimes we assume that only the babies, the children, are in need of information. But, beloved, respectfully, some of us grown folk need some lessons, got some lessons we got to learn too. And that'll help our babies out a whole lot. That's what the text is talking about in 2 Timothy 2:15. Study to show yourself approved. So when you come out, you don't have to look like you got egg on your face. Like look crazy. You understand what I'm saying? You are firm in your position. You're fair with everybody. And you're consistent. That can only lead to success. You understand what I'm saying? And these are the things, these are three principles that I submit to you tonight as we get ready to go look at what a goal should be. Give you an example of a goal and an objective and an action plan. We'll open up the phone line to you, 657-383-0944. What are you saying, doctor? What are you saying? What are you saying? I'm saying to you again that these three principles are pivotal. Anyway, you start in anything, excuse my English, if you're not going to stick to them. Because surely you can start them, and just like we have over the last 4 or 5 decades of greatness, good movements, good calls, good interests, good organizations have started, and they have crumbled. Why? Because there was no consistency. One of the problems to that, as you study these various movements and what have you, is that too many people had their hand in your soup. Uh-oh, I just said something. Say it again, doctor. I said too many people got their hands in your soup. Chef don't need everybody in the kitchen messing with his meal. Now, does that mean that you got to hate somebody? No. Does that mean that you are racist? No. Does that mean you're No, that means you love your stuff enough to ensure that you get what you need. You and your children get what they need. Everybody don't need to have a play and a say in your business. I want you to hear me now and you think about it later. Okay? Now, if you're going to be successful now, you look up, and before you know it, you don't know who done put the monkey wrench in things, because you know that everybody in there. Are y'all with me? Be firm. Be fair. But be consistent with what you say you're going to do. If you're not going to do it, just don't do it. Just say you ain't going to do it. Keep it moving. See, this is why a lot of young people have learned to distrust authority, because they've been disappointed and let down by it. Like people that they looked up to who made promises to them that they were going to get certain outcomes in return for certain behaviors. And in reality, they were only disappointed. So they say to themselves, hey, I'm going to do it the way I know I'm happy with it. And guess what? They have been consistent in the destructive backwards behavior that has been marred and marked by the urban American experience for a whole generation or better. See? You know what I mean? Now, what are we going to do about it? What are we going to do about it? So, firm, fair, and consistent. Amen? When you see young fella, young lady, stepping out of line, you have a basis, a communal basis for correcting them. Fathers and mothers, elders, have already predetermined what we're going to have for our people here, for our young and our old. And everybody has to comply or conform to that. Or you have to be extricated from our community. Now, I can tell you that before I get to the goals, objectives, and action plan, one of the challenges, we had him on here before, Sanders, he points this out quite well, the fact that it becomes a control of community that you really don't own. Many of us just live in neighborhoods, but we don't own no community unless you own the driving forces of a community, of a society, economics of it, the basis for education, transportation, business, even your theological position. If those things are out of whack, out of sort, you ain't got nothing. Okay? All right. I think you understand what I'm saying. Now, let me identify gold for urban America. I told y'all what urban America was. Sometime we've been talking about this, and I defined it the other day, Tuesday, as these centers where you have high population and concentration of people that reside with one another. And often they rely on the same social and economic resources. And when you have a greater population of people than resources available, it becomes a competition and a rat race. And it makes for an environment where some feel as though maybe if I don't play by the rules, I'll get what I want. It justifies criminality. And stepping over the line on somebody else's space. Not a good look, but it's real. So what is this gold, Doctor? How do we fix that? Listen. First, and you're gonna hear some things in there. I believe that no one is gonna be more angry than the devil after tonight. There ain't gonna be nobody more frustrated and angry than the devil. You know why? Because if you use this, the enemy won't be able to make a fool out of you no more. Shake them off and stamp them under your feet. Yeah. Look. What's this goal, Doctor, for urban America? You got poverty. You got despair. You got violence and crime. You got poor schools. You got this thing just out of sort, out of whack. Well, consider this. The goal. Urban America. You can tailor this to your individual city, your state, wherever you are. So transform the lives of those urban residents by providing them with self-empowering knowledge. Self-empowering knowledge. Not relying on somebody else, but individually being able to empower yourself with knowledge as well as resources that can be implemented immediately, not waiting 10 years, not on a feasibility study or somebody else to come in. Neither Jesus Christ, Superman, Santa Claus, or the Easter Bunny is going to save you. You've got to save yourself. The goal is to empower people, residents that live in these areas, through knowledge and resources, such that they can act on their condition immediately. All right? Now, that's our goal. So what's your objective, Doctor? What's your objective? Well, participants who are actively involved in this process will learn what behaviors and what sorts of things in the environment that need to be modified to ensure safety, the social-emotional healing, and the success of young people and adults within these urban American families and these communities. And these are things that they focused on changing right away. And let me back up just for a second. Essentially, three different causes of a disease or breakdown, right? It's biological in nature. And it's said to be behavioral in nature as well as environmental. Now, some people want you to believe that running around acting like a buffoon, tearing up your neighborhood is just because of your pigmentation and your biology because you're black. That's the most foolish thing I ever heard. Y'all know that there are some what we call white. I hate to use those terms, but for the sake of conversation, some so-called white folk who clown. In every ethnicity, there are people who are out of order. It just so happened in urban America, they tend to, it is mostly populated with Negro, black, and colored folk. And too many of our young people have been allowed to get away would deem out of order. Simply. Now, what do? We change that behavior. The expectation is that you change that behavior. Whatever the behavior is that is associated with the death, the destruction, the robbery, and the hurt, and the demise, we got to change that, period. And what else you can change is the environment. You can create and structure a boundary in a neighborhood, in a community of people that share the same values and behave in a manner in which they can see to it that that environment is healthy and wholesome for children and adults and everybody else. That's something you have power over doing, and that's what we're talking about empowering you to do. So the learning objective here is for you. We're talking about pedagogically now. This is a pedagogical approach. The learning objective is for you to learn first that you need to change behavior. I'm speaking collectively now, not everybody. But if your brother's hurt, you ought to be hurting too. You know the story about Cain and Abel. He asked him, hey, man, hey, where your brother at? What? My brother's keeper? Yes, you are your brother's keeper. You see him fall and you go pick him up. All right. Let me stay focused here. Change your behavior. Create an environment that is conducive for the behavior expectation that you look for. Amen, all. All right. This will lead to the safety and the healing of young people and adults alike. Do this right away. Don't wait on it. Do this right away. Do this right away. Then lastly, this action plan. So you see how we identified an aim? That's our goal. We were more specific now about what it is we want to see happen. This is what we're going to measure for. I told you the other night that what learning is a change in behavior after you've been instructed or exposed, changing your attitude, your outcomes, your behavior after you have been exposed to certain information. Or that's how you know someone learned. See, what do we have to do to make sure that our young men don't feel like they got to shoot and kill one another, that our young ladies don't have to farm themselves out and disrespect themselves and be disrespected and abused? What is it we have to do to make sure that our people know that you don't have to try to medicate your pain with drugs and alcohol? What must we do to let folk realize that our children don't have to be on the lowest end of performance academically? That's what we're talking about. It's in the pedagogy. What are you teaching, and how are you teaching that to who? Now, if we're going to start talking about everybody and their mama, as I told you earlier, you're going to miss the mark, because everybody don't have that problem. Little brothers and little sisters with this problem, that's what we're talking about, that's what we're talking to, and that's who in love we're going to reach out to and to transform their conditions and circumstances. Now, how do you do that, doctor? Some of it has to do with a behavioral modification. And I don't know if you know of Ossable and Pavlo, but they were behavioralists, psychologists. And they came up with theories that were based on some of their research. and what Pavlo suggested is that, you know, you have stimulus for a certain behavior, and every time that behavior is demonstrated and repeated, you provide another stimulus of reward. Well, what happens when you run out of the money, the free food and the free everything, and now you got to get off your behind and work? Well, you create a situation where they depended on what? Looking for doing only when they got an immediate reward. Is that going to work? I'm afraid not. That dog will not hunt. Well, Ossable said that with apparent condition, that was classical condition that Pablo suggested. Ossable suggested that with apparent condition, what you do is you get them used to the certain behavior, right? And psychologically, they expect and get used to and comfortable with doing it to where they don't want to change. They have self-rewarded themselves to continue in their behavior. You can walk away from them then. They do this often with cows on farms. There is a wire that keeps them in a certain boundary. And every time that cow walks up and too far, they get shocked or stuck. That stays on that cow's mind, and it'll stay back there. And after a while, you can take the barbed wire and the fence and everything else up. That cow will stay there. Similarly, this is what Ossible's research suggests. Even with human beings, they can become conditioned to certain behaviors. Now, just imagine that we condition our young people to proactive, positive behaviors. That yield proactive, positive, productive results. That's what we're talking about, beloved. Changing the spectrum. Yeah, we all are human beings, and we act out of conditioning and behavioral development and so forth and so on. We're social beings. We live and learn by example of other people. So bring positive, proactive examples. Let that be the standard. Be firm, fair, and consistent with that. You see? All right? So what is this plan you got, Dr.? You done told us about the goal. That's to transform residents by empowering them with knowledge and resources. Start that right away, you said. You done told us that what we really are focusing on is learning what behaviors and what part of our environment we need to change. That's going to bring about healing and success. And you said we need to do that immediately. All right, so what's this action plan? How do we get better? How do we get better? Listen. And I told you also that nobody's going to be mad but the devil. But if you do this, the devil ain't going to be able to make a fool out of you no more. All right. Consider this. First, you look around your neighborhood. Y'all say snitches get stitches, right? Well, look around your neighborhood and see what the problem is and see who's causing the problem. Catch them. Catch the problem makers and say to them, we don't want to throw you out, but we want you to improve. We want you to be an essential part of our change. So give them a leadership role to where they're out front. They were already out front anyway, right? And let them work to organize everyone else around something that's going to help everybody. What you mean, Doctor? Yeah, the drug dealer, the gangbanger, and the hustler, they provide negative results. But if you tap into them right, guess what they can also do? They can be a transforming force. Bring the Lashawdies to school. Tell Lil Shawty, don't you go in there and act the fool, man. I've seen this happen, by the way. I've seen this happen where hardened criminal thug gangbangers told young people, I want you to succeed, and I want you to go and do what I couldn't do. Are y'all with me? Yeah. See, that generation has failed already. They messed up, and they recognize that we need to take these Lil Shawtys. That's a street vernacular, a euphemism for a young person. And we need to empower them to do what we couldn't do for ourselves. Break this cycle for the next generation. Organize. When you organize, then you need to find the right information, the process, the pedagogy to teach the people as they assemble themselves. Teach them how to love one another. First, teach them how to love themselves. Then teach them how to love one another. Then teach them that our love for each other is what binds us together. Watch it now. When you hurt, I hurt. When you're happy, I'm happy. So educate people that you find that share a like mind, a like, a common experience. Right? They become an assembly. And as you are together now, what are you going to do? I hear people say all the time, we need to come together. Black people need to come together. All right, when you get together, what y'all going to do, tear some stuff up? Clown? No. No. And we firm, fair, and consistent about that. We want you to come together. We want you here, but you need to be able, you need to be in order, and you must know what to do. What are designs on your trestle board of life? Well, we have to devise that collective rule and regulation for every member of our community. So how does this work, Doctor? Y'all understand that the family is the building block of a neighborhood and or community, then the two society, the family. Get the family right. Teach structure, discipline, and order within the family. Let that permeate your whole neighborhood. Everybody needs to be on the same team. Who going to do that? That's not the school job. That's not the public school job. What you say, Doctor? I said that is not the public school's job. Whose job is it, Doctor? Elohim intended for fathers to do that. Well, okay, we got a little problem. Some of our fathers are not there. Well, who can stand in their stead? Let me see. The church. It's where we provide most of our, certainly historically, respect and support. It has the spiritual and moral authority to assume that role as the priest for families and homes. Huh? Teach those things. Encourage those. Build them up. All right? Then number four, develop a system of governance. Now, this is the one thing that my people have a hard time doing, and that's succumbing themselves to governance. If a man or woman is incapable or unwilling to govern themselves by something, have some set of standards, it's going to be hard for them to be able to function and get along with other people. One of the callers said the other night quite well that if you don't believe in something, it's going to be difficult for anyone to teach you anything. You don't have some standard. See? So governance. Governance is important. Even in, but there needs to be some governance. Let's get to the rest of this. Then you need to create a process of policing yourself. Wait a minute. Hold on. Listen. If you don't want the police in your neighborhood and regular patrolling it, then you keep the crime down. You keep the need for them to be down. You take little Ray Ray and little Johnny and tell him, look here, you cut that mess out because we're not going to call the police. You're going to get this belt. We're going to help you accept Jesus Christ as your personal Savior. Huh? In love, man. In love. Be the police. Be the police in your children's life. Be the police in your neighbor's life. Be the police of one another. If you see one of us going wrong, you see us at fault, the Bible says take it to your brother. Huh? It's in the Word. It's already in there. You understand? But create a process by which you police yourself. And when you do that, you can justify keeping other folk out. Remember I told you don't need everybody in your business anyway? Okay. Enact an aim for educational development for your children. An aim for health promotion in your family, in your neighborhood. An aim for social development. An aim for economic development. An aim for community development. That was number six. Lastly, number seven, form a sort of gate around all this hard work you've done put together for one another. You know what people who tend to be rich and wealthy do? So they don't have to deal with other folk that don't share their values. They put a gate around their community. And they hire them a security force to watch that gate to make sure the wrong people don't come in. Well, even in urban America, you can be organized to the point that you create yourself a gate, if not a physical gate, a social gate that protects your values and your ideas. And, beloved, you ought to be firm, you ought to be fair, and you ought to be consistent process. I guarantee you, if you do that, we'll see some things turn around for our babies. Yeah, we will. Now, John Legend, he's a young man, but he went way back to old school, and he got Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes, a cut they did back in the 70s, and he redid this piece. It sound all right. It ain't like Harold Melvin. It wasn't like my boy Teddy Pendergrass or Harold Melvin, but he did. I listened to him. 657-383-0944. That's the number to call. You listen to Talk Straight. We talk from the topic, Urban American Pedagogy, Part 2, The Plan of Action.
Wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed. No more got to think any time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so badly from what it used to be. There is so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, oh yeah.
Out of the way.
No, it is.
Maybe send a listen. What you have to say.
That's that pedagogy right there. Yeah.
Some people get ran off the block or at the hood or wherever if they're not, again, in the mess or the riffraff at times, or they get picked on or targeted. And, you know, so, yeah, we do have gated communities. It's just not all that wholesome at times.
Well, no, what I mean by gated community is one where there's a single interest in.
I got what you're saying. I know.
That you control now. And this keeps the people out that you don't want in, and the people in that you don't want to be damaged by those who are out. So you understand what I'm saying? No, I think I get what
you're
saying.
Yes, I do.
I think I get what you're saying.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we're controlling negativity. Not you or me, but some are. They are controlling that because we're in control. Like you said, if we start taking a positive stand, then we'll reap positive benefit. But when we,
so here's what happens. There are good people like you and I who really have thought about these type of things, but they're just not sure when. Okay?
Yeah.
And they are concerned that if I take my time and attention and I step out there to do this, I'm going to be the only one doing it.
Yeah.
And after I've done all that I can do, somebody's going to come and step all on what I got, what I ain't done. And mm-hmm. then it'd be a waste of my time. And that
mm-hmm.
discourages folks.
Mm-hmm.
What that tells me, 72, is that this cannot be a one person, one woman, one man action.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be a collective action. That kind of takes me back to one of the points that I talked about. And that's the political aspect of your pedagogy, the critical pedagogy, where you devise the right thought and you put political energy behind protecting it, sustaining it. What do you think about that? You think that's out of order for anybody, particularly black folk, to say we're going to organize a political structure around education, the health, the economics, and everything else we need for our children, our family?
No, I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all. I think that's a great plan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the challenges, though, is when, and I used to live in public housing, you don't get to make the rules.
Huh? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But even where you lay your head, you don't get to make the rules. Were you going to say something? Go ahead.
I mean, that's true. So, again, I think, and that's part of people's problem in general, is playing by whatever rules. And once we play by the rules, we need to accept them until we can, like you said, develop something of your own, and then you can set your own rules.
Watch out now. I'm going to share with you a social model. This is real. There was a certain preacher who was up north, and out west in California, and this was modeled
mm-hmm.
as well as a So, preacher now, Baptist preacher. One Sunday he decided that for offering, we're not going to take any money. And he had a sizable congregation, but a lot of the people in his congregation were addicts or alcoholics. Some
mm-hmm.
of them had been in prison, and some of them had been arrested and in criminal activity and so forth and so on. And his heart was with them to change. Right, so he said that we're not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to take this today. I want you to, for the next 4 weeks, 72. He encouraged them to write down how much money they spent on their hair, on their nails, on junk food, and things that they could live without. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wrote that first time they put it in. They put it in the offering plate. And they just put a number down, put it in the offering plate. He kept that, left it on the altar. Came back the next week, thing, and it added some more to it, right? And he did that for the next week, and it added more to it. Just a number now, just a number. Didn't put no names in, identify who was who or what was what, just the numbers. And by the end of the month, he had tallied up all of the numbers among the people that were in the congregation. And he realized, and he said to them, what you all did was to put the potential of millions of dollars in the offering plate, money that you yourself identified that you could have done something different with.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Wow.
The next month, what to do is I want you to start saving every week just a portion of that. And then I want
mm-hmm.
you to put that in the offering plate. And I'm going to tell you what we're going to do with it. They did that. And do you know they bought land and started a farming project, opened gas stations and hotels down south? I got to visit one of these some years ago. It was quite extraordinary. And it said to me that these were people now who were considered to be decadent, drugging, alcoholism,
mm-hmm.
prostitutes. But what he did was to demonstrate to them the power that was innate within them that they didn't recognize. Isn't that something?
Yeah. I wonder, and
help me. 657, guys. 383-0944. Give me a call. I want to hear from you. I know you. I see you around the corner there. I see you. It's all right. I ain't going to let nobody bite you. But I'd love to hear from you. 657-383-0944. We're talking about urban American pedagogy, and this portion of our conversation is the action plan. And if you don't mind, 72, while it's just you, me, and the Holy Ghost talking right now, I'm going to go back to the monologue, right? An aspect of the monologue. I want to begin with what in this text, this biblical text, 2 Timothy 2 and 15, the setting is clear. Timothy is a young man who is following the instruction of the Apostle Paul as he tries to build a congregation of believers, and he tries to manage their social behavior, right? And as he tries to keep people focused, young man, and he was becoming discouraged. If you read the whole text, he was becoming the first chapter and so forth. He had become discouraged some by some of the other people's behavior. And Paul wrote to him and said to him, don't worry about them people. Some of them been around here longer than you've been breathing. But look, son, if you study, you educate yourself, you empower yourself with the knowledge and the information, you can show yourself to be approved before the Creator who appointed you, who called you, who gave you a purpose. And look, you can work and do what you do to save your people, and you ain't got to be ashamed. I want to put a pin right there. But we got a lot of brothers who get the running off at the mouth and don't know what they're talking about. Huh? You don't know none of them dudes.
I've seen some.
And in time, what they say and what they do flops. So they lose confidence in themselves. And everybody else look at them and assume that the next cat that come around here, they're going to be doing a bunch of talking, and they're just going to be fruitless, right? Well, what the text here is admonishing us all to do is to make sure we go and get information. Last week we talked about wisdom, knowledge, understanding in Proverbs, right? So there's an opportunity in urban America for us to seek out the knowledge, the information necessary to bring about the transformation that we need. And I just want to emphasize three principal things. This is what a lot of my people don't like. They don't like when you're firm with them. They don't like that. But this allows, when people are not firm with you, that allows you to be out of order, to be destructive, and to cause chaos. And you feel like ain't nobody got no business saying nothing to you. At what point do you stop? Or should somebody stop you? You understand what I'm saying? If you are not fair, though, by giving those. Now, the other day we were talking, and I believe it was a caller from Toronto. He was saying that he wanted to be a little compassionate on folk, right, and not use himself. The fairest thing to do is to let you know ahead of time, you cut up, you're going to get that tail worked. Is that fair? Maybe I'm wrong. Is that fair? Is that fair, Jacksonville?
I think it's fair. I mean, the Bible even spoke about discipline, even. I mean, and consequences. So, yeah.
Okay. Right. See, you cut up, that's an automatic butt whooping. You don't want your tail whooped, then act right. That's not fair, huh? Now, why is it that my people, a lot of my people whom I love, seem to take the position that if you get on me, you're doing that just because I'm black? And I've been oppressed. You know I had a hard time. Leave me alone. What about that? What about that?
That is, I think, unfair and not right. A good example today at the clinic is the no eating rule. For one, for sanitation reasons. Two, you need to stay masked up, and if you're eating, then your mask can't be up. And
okay.
Three, you're getting treatment. So this person set up and broke the rules, for one, by eating. Okay, that's bad enough. And two, when you got through with your fruit that you was eating, you threw the seeds all behind the chair.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, so because you are sickly and elderly, we just should overlook that and not say anything to you.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but you were in the wrong on all counts, so you know. Yeah, so, and then you making it bad for the rest of the people that may want to sneak and eat, and so they try to react. You feel me?
That's
so, I don't understand, you know, what people be thinking. All I could say is, I mean, stick to what's right. And if somebody don't like it or they get upset, that's just okay. But, yeah, people need constant reminders when they're not doing the right things.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I link the pedagogical approach called the dialogic learning approach to this concept of being fair. Because I do think that we need to have some serious conversation, particularly in African-American communities and neighborhoods, about the fact that you are not exempt from following rules.
Thank you.
Because of your plight, your situation, you're not the only one hurting and that's been through something.
Yeah.
Okay? And if you are, you'll keep doing that if you don't change your behavior. So we need to
Like you said, it'll be because I'm black, they're saying something or this or that. Or in this situation I was telling you about the person eating, oh, well, because I'm diabetic, I have to eat. That may be true, but you don't have to trash the place up, and you don't have to be disrespectful with your situation.
There's an appropriate
with your situation.
Sure.
Yeah, come
sure.
on.
And look, when you don't do it, someone else is looking, and they say, well,
that's right. Yeah.
You let so-and-so also get away. Why can't I do it? Well, but when we
and
are
ultimately,
fair, we,
guess who you're hurting? You're hurting yourself because this is where
that,
you have to come.
That's absolutely
you're hurting
right.
yourself.
That is absolutely right. And I'm also on this protest, but when your protests leave your front door, your street, your neighborhood tore up, where you're now begging for something to come back, and then what good was that? Who did you hurt, really?
Not good at all, right.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You're so angry that you're just going to leash out on everything and everybody. You're going to tear everything up in your path. Well, why shouldn't somebody do something? And you can't reason with it. So why should somebody do something to stop it?
Right.
You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the fairest thing to do is to lay it out to everybody from the get-go. Here are the expectations. This is what we're looking for. One of the things I talked about earlier was identifying as an objective for our teaching. We have to identify the behaviors, not people, not individuals now, not ethnicities, but the behaviors that are counterproductive and destructive. We got to identify them. We got to be honest about that, right? And then we have to ask ourselves, what part of our social environment do we need to clean? Uh-oh. Now, it don't make no sense to walk through certain neighborhoods and see all kind of fast food litter around the place.
Yeah.
I'm talking straight tonight.
Talk straight.
See? Yeah. That food did not get down there by itself, and didn't nobody put it there but somebody that likely lived there or came through there from somebody that they know. Why is that?
Yeah.
Is that what it means to be black? Absolutely.
No, I'm black, and I certainly don't, and I've seen people throwing things out of their car, I mean whole bags
Absolutely.
And stuff, as they're driving. That's sick.
You understand what I'm saying? Now,
sick and trifling.
Well, and listen, when we talk to them, we don't want to, I wouldn't recommend you do that in front of everybody else necessarily. Sometimes we talk about a virgin. That's good for them to be ashamed. But when you're dealing with somebody that ain't got no shame, man, you just got it rough, man.
Yep, that's right. That is the truth.
You understand what I'm saying? They ain't got no shame about nothing. Ain't no shame in my game. Well,
because I would be highly embarrassed for somebody to see me throw some trash out of my moving car.
You see what I mean? Well, watch this. Watch this. I talked about behavior modification. I talked about classical conditioning and no parent condition. Okay. Now, there's this, with no parent condition, there's this aspect that when you can associate loss or pain with a certain behavior and acting in that way or out that behavior, it's easy for you to get them to do certain things. You understand what I'm saying? And what you're saying, Doctor? Sometimes my daddy used to tell us all the time, I'm whipping you because I love you. Okay? Now, that butt whipping made me think about that. Hold on, he may be around the corner.
yep.
Hey, I don't know when he's going to show up. Where he at? Maybe sometimes what we needed in being firm and fair is to let folk know that even when you're wrong, when we chastise you, when we correct you, when we extend the rod of correction, not all the time, right? But when we extend the rod of correction, that's to save you from ultimate destruction and from the destruction of everybody else around you. Is that unfair? Is that unfair?
No.
You understand what I'm saying?
But, I mean, honestly, so it has to be taught at an early age. They have to be taught, children have to be taught respect, discipline, obedience, you know, all of that. Because, again, you're teaching them that, so as they grow in age, then all those things will be established. And you won't find them throwing trash out of cars, being defensive when somebody's giving them constructive criticism or trying to help, you know, just normal, everyday things that you would think is, oh, it's common sense. Oh, it's common knowledge. But for some people, like you said, it's not because they never had that guidance or direction, instruction even.
Okay. I want you to consider you got 5 children. 4 of them regularly get instruction about what's appropriate for them to say and how for them to act, carry themselves. 1 of them don't get it. They all wind up on the same playground together. Okay? Can you imagine what's going to happen?
Yeah.
On that playground?
Yeah.
That one child, now, does that mean that's a bad child? Inherently bad?
No. I mean, well.
So who do we need? So let me ask you this question. Let me ask you this. Who do we need to have a conversation with, the child or with the child's parents?
Oh, with both of them, but the parent first.
Okay. And do you want that parent to feel like they're less than the other 5 homes or 5 parents? Or do we say to them, in the interest of keeping all of our children safe, we want you to join us in agreement that this is the expected behavior on the playground, and this is how you reinforce that at home. You see what I mean? That's the dialogic. That's the dialogic thing we're talking about. We're talking about dialoguing now and shooting straight with one another. See, and if you don't want anybody else to go ahead.
Again, we don't want to crutch that with, oh, well, his mom didn't know to tell him or this and that, so my child shouldn't be beat up or bullied or whatever the case be because you fail or you didn't even know how. That's not my child's fault, or,
right.
you know, it shouldn't be his problem. So with that being said, you ought to be approachable when, again, you in the wrong.
That's right.
And I think that's what we need to start trying to encourage in one another as adults and in within our own community.
That's it, right.
Accountability.
Doctor, you know you were wrong, but to go into 3072's space and take them chocolate donuts without asking. You knew
right.
you were wrong.
Yeah.
Because you knew she was going to turn around, reach back and grab one and steal nothing but air. And go, oh, where my donuts at?
Well, she had a bunch of them. Well, you didn't know she was selling those to pay her mortgage, anything. You didn't get permission.
Those.
You stole them. Now you done took food out of her mouth.
I was hungry. You know I was hungry. I'm hungry. You got all them donuts over there. I ain't going to just stand by and be hungry. You got all them donuts. You ain't the only one needs something to eat. But
yeah.
Now, you say that laughingly, but it's a fact and it's a reality. And understandably, hard times cause people to respond in desperate ways. In fact, I said to young people, one of the motivations for you to work hard and establish something for yourself is because the older you get, the hungrier you're going to get, and the less mama, society, and everybody is going to care about how hungry you are. And the more you go without eating, you become desperate to eat. You understand what I'm saying? That's the ingredients for leading to criminal type behavior.
Yeah.
Right? When we catch them young and we teach them how to be productive and to be self-caring and empowered, they have the best chance, the very best chance, later on being able to say, hey, I don't have to steal nothing. I don't have to want for nothing. Now, and, you know, life will teach you, though, that sometimes you can do everything just right, and it still don't come out like you want it. Does that mean you go away mad, angry, afraid to just reach out?
Mm-hmm.
No. Because there is a lesson that you can learn from even that experience. If there's nothing other than how to avoid repeating the same mistakes you made.
Yeah.
Ain't nothing wrong with making mistakes if you learn from it, right? And you correct them. In fact, that's how you learn. Baby is the best example of a mistake maker who intuitively figures out how to get it right. You know what I'm talking about, when they first start crawling or trying to walk. They're crawling and they climb up on things. You understand? They brain some kind of way till they move, and they move. And the leg move, they wobble. They wobble, and try to put, boop, and I hit that little booty. But guess what happened? 37, you ain't never seen nothing like that. You ain't had no children, 37. You don't know how they
Not a one.
you know what happened, don't you? You know what happened. Somewhere intuitively. You know, we've all seen it as parents. We sat down watching, and we're like, wow. And we, I know for both of mine, it was a treat to count how long is it going to take for them to realize that they got to get back up. You understand what I'm saying? And one of them, my daughter, bless her heart, she was determined to get that thing right. I mean, she wasn't no crying or nothing. She was. And that look on her face, I'm gonna get this. Fail about 3 or 4 times before. Then she just reached out and held on to things for a long time until she got used to balancing herself. And then when she had to come, then it was a smile on her face ever since then. You understand? I can't keep her in the country now. That child go all the way over. They're in the country, man. I can't. Yeah. The booger man, I can't. We're talking about urban American pedagogy. What is the approach to to teaching our folks, right? We're talking about now part two, the action plan. See, it's one thing to talk, but my friend Pastor Waller would tell you that James Brown had a hit song titled Talking Loud and Ain't Saying Nothing. Yeah. And reality is, it's nothing wrong with if you got something to say, say it. Got something on your chest, mm-hmm. say it. But make sure what you say is substantive. It's meaningful.
Yeah.
It's useful. Otherwise, nobody wants you to just run your mouth. Is that right, Pastor Waller? Bunch of jibber jabber.
Well, I mean, that's very true. How y'all doing, Pastor Doc?
Hey, how you doing, Pastor?
Hey there, 372. How are you?
Great.
Yeah, that's good. You know what James Brown did say? Say it loud. You know,
I'm black and proud.
You know, but if it ain't real, you know what I mean. In other words, talk is cheap. But if it's something that you got to say, tell it. That's a good thing to tell it. But as you said, I mean, what's sincere, hard man would speak truth, and that's what we need more of. And that's what you do on the show. Pastor Doctor, you're giving people a chance to speak the truth. And the only thing that's going to make us free is something that I've learned, and that is the truth. Tell me the truth, even if it hurts. Even if it hurts, just tell me the truth. You understand?
What do you say?
Just speak the truth to me. I know it may hurt because I'm at a point in my life where I need some things to be changed. So it's okay to speak truth. It's basically what I'm saying. The 3072, I don't think there's nothing about the truth that'll do me more harm than the things I used to do. You know, the things I used to be on, it's done me a whole lot of harm. And it was a lie. And I was living it. So, yeah, speak the truth. It's all right. I yield back to you on that note.
No. You preach it now. You preach it now. So I'm thinking about it. This is a real story, Pastor. Grandmother, a young boy went in the bathroom to use the bathroom, right? And the grandmother didn't hear no water running. So when he came out, she said, "Baby, go in the bathroom and wash your hands." He said, "For what?" He said, "Oh, well, you get dirt on when you go in the bathroom." She told him a little lie right there. So he says, "I was just in there and I looked at it. I didn't see no dirt on." dealing with the uncomfortability of explaining to him that your little genitals got dead skin cells on it, and you've been walking around, you're busted. You understand what I'm saying? You've got germs on there.
Yeah.
When you put your hands in your face, you can cause you to stuff. That's where flu virus comes from. Both, all kind of. You understand what I'm saying? You children are good for that. Putting the hands on your nose. House and everywhere else, and then you want to put your hands on things in the house and shake folk hands, put your hand on people. Rather than telling them the truth, you're going to tell them that he got dirt. He said, "I didn't see no dirt on." I was just in there looking at
him. That's something for real. Yes, sir. Got to pay attention to the instructions, man, to suggestions and things like that sometimes. And, you never know whether they're good or bad, and I guess that's probably why the person had to respond like that, because they go on what they see. But you know what the Bible says: you walk by faith and not by sight. And that's a hard one, though. And that's not something that's easy to do, because in the world, from what I was known to hear a lot of times, that out of sight, out of mind. We don't see it, we don't believe it.
Yeah.
And that's one of the mentalities of the world's way.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
sir.
Well, now, let's go and put the old where the school did. Anytime we tell our children about a fictitious character like Santa Claus or the Easter Bunny or even Superman, why should they question the validity of other things we tell them? You see, it takes them a little while to grow up and realize ain't nothing to it. Then they say, you've been lying to me all the time. Look at you. Oh, be my dad. Oh, be my mom. You've been lying to me the whole time. Look at you.
That's
what about
terrible. That's a terrible thing, yeah, believe me. And that can leave a mark on a person for a long time, man.
Sure can.
You know,
sure can.
Because that has happened. And it's still going on. It's still going on. The lie is strong. It's popular. And, you know, it's a sad case, but it is very popular now. And people have gravitated to the lie.
Yeah. That's only one example of what we call a little white lie. That, and I'm going back to being firm, being fair, and consistent with instruction, right, with modeling, particularly for young people. But the problem is there's some wrong folks who've been living a lie. Uh-oh. Johnny Taylor said 30-72, I'm running out of lies. It's hard to come up with an
My goodness.
Johnny, boy, you're a mess, Johnny. He said, it's hard to come up with. Last week we run out of lies, Johnny. And the babies are really
man.
Okay. Huh?
That's pretty deep there. That's running out of lies.
That's what Johnny Taylor said, man. I just said, Johnny.
Yeah, the brother sure knew how to sing, man. He knew what he was doing. Yeah, he get that mic in his hand, brother.
Right. Oh, man. Yes, but he told the truth, though, see. He told the truth. At some point, you're going to have to come clean, right? Now, who wants to look bad? Who wanna be embarrassed? 3072 was saying she'd be embarrassed if somebody saw her throwing her food at the cop. Some folks don't care, man. They think it's a new place. You know?
Yeah.
Chicken bone, fish, spaghetti, pinto beans.
Oh, man.
All.
But man, listen to that.
Steak, you know what I mean? What about it, 72?
I can remember as a teenager, throwing bottles at the car. Now, as a teenager, you don't get the full impact of how dangerous and how destructive that is. Yeah, you don't think that, hey, this bottle may startle somebody when it hit their windshield, and they can get into a wreck. Well, the glass is damaging the street. Adults, come on.
Yeah,
yeah, we should know. Grown-ups.
That's the truth.
Very similar to so that bottle could do some damage. You know that now.
Yeah.
You didn't have the fullness of it back then. You say, oh, man, talk to me. That's something. that is something.
You know,
and to find out that later, what? How did you feel about that 3072 when you found out about that later?
I'm disturbed. Yeah, I'm disturbed.
I like that.
I'm bothered that I did that then. Like, how dumb and how unthoughtful. Yeah. And thank God that nothing bad like that did happen. But, a lot could have happened because of ignorance and foolishness.
That's so wonderful to know that the truth brought, and like I say, the truth does hurt, but it makes things a lot better when you exercise it and had those thoughts. And that's why I asked that question. And so that was a very, very interesting way to receive something that made you feel that way, you know. And I'm glad that you let it be known, because in being ignorant and you came to realize that's where the power come in at, because being ignorant don't mean you have to stay ignorant. You know, and that's
what happened
to me. I was out here doing all I was doing, and I discovered, I said, man, you were showing up ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew I was, but it didn't dawn on me then. But after the fact, it did hurt when I found out how ignorant I was. Things got better, but it's still. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
I think you said this. Uh-huh. I'm going to throw this question. And you help me. You lead me. Lead me, man. And explain to me like I'm 3 years old. Okay? how much money do I need to get up off my tail and do something for myself? How much money do I need to do that? To start, Pastor.
To start, how much money do you need to start to do something for yourself? And that's one of the hardest things about money does not make everything all right. And because a lot of people have money and they don't really actually have the peace. And so to be able to go do something without a whole lot of money or with money, you first have to take that step toward, I would say, peace, because that's what I was seeking. You know, I was seeking the peace. I said, okay, I didn't know anything about the rich man who was giving away all his money. I didn't have it like that, but I did have a small piece of paper, though, you know. And I didn't just give it all away at one time, 30-72. But when I came to realize the harm that I was bringing to my community and the money that I was getting, money started to not be so interesting to me, if that makes sense. And I started to fight. I'm telling you, it's a fight with myself. It wasn't a fight with nobody else. Mm. It was a fight with myself that I don't even like this money right now. And I don't know how I got to that point. I know there wasn't none of my doing for me to get to that point. In other words, God helped me to understand that he didn't even tell me to stop studying for him. That's what I love about God. He knew that once I got my life together, he knew I wasn't that kind of guy. So, and that's when I went all the way down to that. I didn't have a change in my pocket. And then that's when God said, now I can use you. And I said, that was something that was about money. So it's okay to start out.
And it was like, then you can take on your true identity. So, some people don't even know who they are because they're living false lives, you know, like
that's
you said,
real.
Because the community raised them. Because
that's it.
This was how we did things where I grew up and when I grew up. So now I have to hold on and embrace this sadness, this looking over my shoulder, this playing ignorant or dumbed down. No, that's not who you are. That's that's an identity you assume, but that's not the real you. Like you said, when you got to know yourself, then that's when you start to feel better. You change.
I mean, that was just an awesome move. I know that. And I felt so much peace. Yeah. So much peace was in it. You know, I don't have the money, but I sure have the peace. So it was like it was an exchange. You know, take this peace and walk in it. And I know, you know, we talked about me going into the store. I was telling you about I sent my daughter into the store at an early age, you know, and because it's just one of them things that I felt the need to do. And sure enough, it worked, man. I sit right in front of that store and let her go in there and get two or three items, you know, and come, little baby, come on back out of there with it. And sometimes I had to send her back in there. it's a good thing to recall. And she wasn't getting no groceries like 15 or 20 things or nothing like that.
Yeah.
Just two or three things or something. And sometimes I had to send her right back in there. You know? Amen. But it was interesting, though. It really was. It helped me. It helped me deal with some things. And it's power. It's power in peace, man. It is.
Yes, sir. Yep.
Let me lean on you there for a second, because you know, and I think 72 knows as well, that after someone has struggled for so long and got a little bit of peace of something, it's hard for you to convince them to go back and give that up now. That's not what you're saying, is it? Is that what you're saying?
Hey, are you saying it's hard to go back and pick it back up, that misery?
To give it up.
Well,
it's
hard to give it up, man. It's definitely hard to give it up.
Okay,
it was hard
okay.
for me. It was hard for me to give it up because I didn't know how to do it. Once I learned how to do it, it became easy. But that's
tell
the thing
about
it. Most people don't know how to do it. A lot,
tell us about
the percentage on people, they don't know how to do that, man. And when they got the money, I'm talking about those who are actually hustling versus those that are going to work from whatever time it is,
mm-hmm.
you know, clocking in and getting no matter what amount of money in an hour. The people that's getting the kind of money that they get, young people, I'm sure, just getting the kind of money that's getting, that job is not going to phase them right about now because they don't have the knowledge of what they're doing. And that's how fast going down the hill is going down at a speed that you have nothing to hold on to. All you can see is blocking the dollar bill. And
I can tell you what. Give me that $50,000 or $60,000. Usually that's all they be having, or even $100,000.
Yeah.
I can do wonders with that, and I bet you I can make that last for some. I can grow that on top of it, and be at peace and comfort. I want somebody, seriously. I mean, they saying they can't give it up. Okay, let's say you just stop and you take all the money that you had from that and put it away while you start to rebuild your life. You got a cushion at least.
Yes, that's the beautiful thing about it, if they knew that.
Yeah.
And most of them don't know it because you still got people want to purchase. And that's the tough part right there. You see, that's what make it tough. You know, do it one more time.
Then you change playgrounds, Pastor Waller. You pick up and move to where don't nobody know you by that.
Yeah, well,
then you start
great.
Your life over again.
Yeah, for certain. And some people may have done that too. I just know that that's an avenue. And you know, some people go into it not wanting to be that way, but just so have a scene where. Hey, they get all this money. Let me try this. And say, if I get it, I'm going to do this. And they had a plan to do that. But if they're ignorant like me, oh, my goodness. My goodness. It just become a lifestyle. Or it became that. And that's the sad part about it. It captures the mind of a lot of people.
Yeah.
So they make them start loving money when they really is not that kind of person.
Yeah.
But it'll look like it. It'll look like they love money because they just continually getting it. And I tell you, it's just a sad thing. It's a hurting thing, too. Not only is it sad, it's a hurting thing to know that it's going on.
If you will, Pastor, apply the text for the love of money to the root of evil. What's that all about? What's that all about? Just right quickly, hit that for me. For the love of money? Is the root
of all kind of evil. It really is because there's a lot of evil that comes with it. And I give you a good example. If you put, let's just use a drug in a location where there are innocent people that don't have money and they get hooked on it, they're going to have to do countless of things to get it because they're thinking about the drug, not just the money, but they don't have the money to get it. So they have to go find ways and means to get more. And it calls them to do things that they normally wouldn't do. And that's the love of money without even knowing it. You know, I love money so much because I got this drug on my mind. And the only way I'm going to get this drug is I got to go get some money because they're not going to give it to me. You see? And that right there would cause people to go after money, to chase it, to come back and to continue to destroy themselves. And that's amazing, man. It's called a high cost of low living. It's just the way it is. And then you got those that are greedy for the money that know that the drug is doing harm and the drug is going to cause people to do all the things that they do. So it has a lot to do with money on both ends. You know, put it in a poor environment. The person don't have no money from the start, and then they have just a little pinch or something that makes them feel like they got to have more. Well, they just go do something to get it, you see.
Yeah.
And the one that's wealthy is sitting back, enjoying themselves, living large, I would say, and, you know, saying, look at them fools out there. I don't know what else they may be saying. I know they shouldn't say it. I was a fool because I definitely was, you know, thinking what I was doing was, it was really cool when it really wasn't. But it goes back to what 3072 said. She said about that bottle when she didn't know. it has to do with that. When you do not know, there's a major difference. And that was just an example. You know, it wasn't about the money at the bottom, but it's just an example that had she known the outcome of what could have happened, I'm sure she would have done something different. It's like, I wouldn't have done that. You know, that's putting other people's lives in harm's way. I don't want to do no harm to nobody. I'm just playing and want to see the bottle break in the street, or somebody can run over the bottle and bust a tire, you know, things like that, man. It's games that people play, brother.
I am considering what you all are saying here, okay? And I'm thinking about Matthew's now, the 6th chapter and the 33rd verse, where the Savior redirected the conversation, right, and the interest that people were displaying. He went on to say, seek first the kingdom of God and all his righteousness. And these things will be added to you. If you're like me and you come up in abject poverty, the minute a little bit of something come along, man, come on now. You want me to let this go now? I just got here.
Hey.
Huh?
That's tough,
I just got here, man. I just got this, man.
Yeah, that's tough right there, man. That's tough, but you want to let it go right now, that's hard to let go. See, some things that brings money, you know, it's just hard to let go. And let me tell you, believe me, you not know that it's a lot of people, as we speak, that don't even know that they love money.
Mm-hmm.
And they're young. I'm talking about the young now, even the ones of age. We get caught up in this, but I'm just speaking about innocent young people that just got hold of some fast money,
right?
And got it real fast, and it's like, man, we do that again. So, yeah, so that happens, and the love for money started to take place right there.
Yeah,
it's like got hooked on love for money.
Not to mention
the root of all kind of evil, though. See, that's the thing.
That's what the text was suggesting. But see, here's where my mind got stuck. The word kingdom, right? It refers to a government or an order for people, right? And when the text says seek first the kingdom, I'm going to put there seek first the order for people that God has, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're talking about teaching urban America to have a plan to get better. No matter all that you've been through, what you were deprived of, how much you were hurt, if you first seek the order that the Almighty has established for man,
all
stuff will fall into place. I wish I had a witness. I don't feel like preaching. I can come to preach, but I'm feeling my help right now. See?
That would be awesome. That would be.
Go ahead.
Add to what Pastor Waller was saying about the young people just having a love for money, but the love is greater than their lives even. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's greater than their lives. I don't want to turn a trick that's going to give me that 50 or 100,000 I spoke to y'all about, but in return, all I can look forward to is in 6 months, somebody going to catch me and shoot and kill me, or I'm going to be locked up for life, or you get me?
Yeah.
So that is evil to make you not even consider your life first, but that money.
Yes, it is.
I'm going to bring something else in the
pastor.
The other night, one of y'all said that there are too many people looking for somebody else like the government to set rules and to have control over their life. I'm going to go back to the text here, seek ye first the kingdom, right? Watch this. Who is the ruler? You know, the kingdom is a place that has a king or queen. Who's the king of your life? Who's the queen of your life? That's the question.
Good question.
Who's in control of your life? Help me, Holy Ghost. I wish I had a witness here tonight, man. I feel my help right now. Listen, I believe, Pastor, that what's missing in the plight of poor people, white, black, green, purple, especially my folks in urban America, is that we have turned our way from the will of the Almighty. And our focus is off. See, yes, in America, it takes money. Yes, this is a capitalistic society. But if you're rooted and grounded in righteousness and truth, so seek ye first the kingdom and all 72, not some of it, not a piece of it, or what you pick and choose, but all of it righteousness. My.
Hey.
And everything you need. And everything you need.
Yeah, that's what the word says. But unfortunately, so many people playing the role and they're ignorant like I was concerning it. They're not going to have that even to be presented to them, especially if they don't already know it. And nobody come along. And that's why I need to be, you know, taken to the streets. You know, this is something that should be out in the air. You know, that should be something that they don't bring out of the church. They don't bring that out of the church. They have it in the church, the book and those words and, you know, and then a few people in there. But yet still, neglecting the world is almost a disgrace to say, well, hey, we got this good information in here.
Yeah.
But we're going to keep it right here. You know, what we say here, stay right here. Don't keep taking nowhere else now. You know, that's what the enemy loves. See, the enemy loves that because it does sound good. You know, it would be a good thing if the people knew that, but they don't know it. And all they know is that the money is the kingdom. And that didn't mean more value than anything. Even as 3072 said, Pastor, it didn't mean more value than their own life. You see, because once they get to chasing that, they don't see anything but that. They don't see the consequences that will come from it. They don't see the hurt. You know, they can be serving somebody that they know this stuff is destroying and can't even see it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know what I'm looking at? The dollar bill.
Yeah. That's
how deep it is.
And drugs is not the only thing that causes people to lose of sensibility, you know what I mean, spirituality. There are other things that they sell themselves out for as well. At the end of the day, you look back and you ask yourself, what was it worth? What was it for? You know, we could certainly look at examples of very popular people, Michael Jackson, Prince, and others, who the world, many folk in the world just glorified. And, you know, they had it all. But yet they lost it all.
A doctor I was reading about that was doing fake procedures, cosmetics, you know. But, he was only thinking about the dollar, you know, $20,000 or $30,000 a patient. And I'll just play like they need something, and they really don't, you know. Yeah. A few people have died, and. Yeah, ultimately you got caught and went to jail. But, yeah, you just so focused on the money, you're not thinking.
Yep. That dollar's that powerful, man.
So, guys, we got about 20 minutes before we leave here. And I want to tie the last 2 days of discussion up. We began talking about pedagogy, which is the style or approach to teaching people in urban American experiences. You know what I mean? Folk who have had it hard, many of whom have been poor, who, you know, don't have a whole lot of formal training or education, right? And just don't have a sense of focus, many. Not everybody, but many. Okay? And how do you teach them? How do you get them to a point where they're in power and control for themselves? The devil or the enemy or someone else with their own interests is not driving them or controlling them, right? And what we talked about, Pastor, earlier was the importance of
in those areas, people. I'm telling you, you don't have to have no education at all. You ain't got to have no money at all. What you need is a will to do better, to do different.
Mm-hmm.
And you get enough people with that same will, you can move mountains. You can move mountains. And there are a lot of people who are, I believe, who have these thoughts, but they just don't have the courage or the motivation. So somebody need to bring it to them. And that's what we're talking about tonight. You make up in your mind that we're going to be firm about wanting and acting to make change. And we're going to be fair in it. And we're going to be fair. We ain't going to just throw the baby out with the bad boy. Huh? But we're going to be consistent now. Don't look for us to let up at all. I'm personally sick and tired of seeing the devil get a 2-for-1. Well, one young brother smoke another one. That brother one is physically dead. The other one is socially dead when he winds up going to jail or the run. I'm tired of that. Sick and tired of that. You understand what I'm saying? But now, do we want to go beat up everybody? And is just locking them up going to do the trick? Absolutely not. The question is what we do for them. And the younger we can catch them, Pastor Wallen, the better we can redirect some of that. I'm not saying to get rid of the old kids, but the younger we do it, we can break the cycle. Maybe I'm wrong. What say you?
No, that's correct. It's real simple. That's correct.
Yeah.
You got to rescue somebody. Why not the youngest?
Yeah. So that's what we've been talking about tonight. And as we wrap up this last portion of our discussion there, but I'm glad that we had an opportunity. You guys laid some really important things on the floor there. I want to be clear that, Pastor, over the last few years, as we've focused on urban American issues and circumstances, that's not just to highlight or gloat anyone's doom and gloom, as it is to recognize what it is that we're trying to change. You understand what I'm saying? Where we're working to improve, to make things better. Now, the hardest thing to do sometimes is to get the people who need help to accept the help. I think about the Savior, Pastor, when all he wanted to do was to save the world. But they put him up on a hill called Golgotha. And the Romans they were some of the most treacherous and dirty, low-down folk you can ever think of. They had a method of torture where they stretch your hands out wide and then they nail your legs crossed together with one another, right? And what happens is it causes your whole body's weight to cave on the inside and you slowly suffocate yourself to death. That wasn't good enough for them, though. They had to take vinegar and cut you and put vinegar in your wound so they can sting you. You understand? That wasn't good enough for them, though, 72. Then they took a spear, a sword, and stuck them in the side. Pastor Waller.
Yes, sir.
What if he came down? What would happen to you and me if he got down and said, I ain't taking this? Woo! What if he said, I don't want to do this. What would have happened, Pastor?
You know, I love Jesus and all, but maybe if he would have came down up off there, half of these people wouldn't be doing the mess they're doing today. They'd have to carry their own cross.
Oh, my goodness.
Jesus.
Yeah, that's a question. My.
Must I bear this cross alone and all the rest of the world go free? There's a cross for everyone. Somebody said there's a cross for you and there's a cross for me. Huh?
Yes, sir.
Well, we all have to carry our own burdens of accountability. Even when it don't feel good, it don't taste good, it don't look like it's good, you've got to be accountable. You understand what I'm saying?
You know, I hope that I'm not coming off to be just a perfect individual that has no, you know, no, but I can say some of my best learned lessons have been the lessons that I had to learn myself, that I had to
right.
take responsibility for, and that I had to pay for. So
right.
there is
right.
absolutely nothing wrong with making mistakes, but I think everything is wrong with continuing to not
that's
make mistakes at some point, but keep choosing the wrong choices.
Yeah, yes, ma'am. And to that point, 72, one of my producers, agent producers, and I were talking earlier this weekend,
mm-hmm.
and especially when we were talking about the difference in a newborn baby dirtying up his diaper.
Right.
And go behind that baby and clean it. And a chronologically grown adult dirtying up a diaper. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Ain't nothing wrong with him, man. Ain't nothing wrong with his mind. Well, that indicates something got to be wrong if a grown person is using the bathroom on themselves. Are you with
mm-hmm.
me?
Mm-hmm.
Because potty training. I was, boy, look, let me stop. Ain't it? Oh man.
But I bet he would stop using the restroom on himself if that grown up had to clean his own behind.
Well,
just let it stay on him. Huh. Yeah.
But what we were saying is the indication that they're sick and they're out of control and that they're
mm-hmm.
incapable to themselves is when you see them lay in their own heap or mess, right? And they
sure.
they don't move. But something is wrong there, right? That's
sure.
true. Something is wrong. And we're supposed to compassionately respond to it. But
sure.
if you are big enough to do what you want to do, huh, and you around here dropping mess everywhere, help me, Holy Ghost. Maybe somebody needs to make you put your hands in and pick it up. Then you'll stop doing it.
Right.
That's fair right there. And that's firm and fair right there.
That's fair.
Yeah. Well, I want to put my hands in it. Well, stop putting it on the ground. Go in there and use that bathroom. And make sure you wash your hands before you come at it. Ain't nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, because they expect somebody else to put their hands in their mess. That's okay for them to do it, but they don't want to put their own hands in their mess. Okay.
Well,
how is that fair? How is that right, even?
Well,
yeah, that's not good.
No, that ain't no good at all. That ain't no good at all.
Mm-mm.
You will run across the right one, and they will tell you that, no, no, sir, I'm not taking your mess. No, ma'am, I ain't taking your mess. And, you know, somebody else will be cleaning you and it up behind me, but yes.
I saw
the
funniest post on Facebook. Somebody's dog had tore up their house with toilet paper. And so the owner took the dog and carried him and made him pick up all the toilet paper. And then he threw the toilet paper back to the dog, like, here, play some more. The dog ran away like, uh-uh. You ain't finna have me do all that again. But, yeah,
oh,
clean up your own mess. You won't want to keep making them.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Who was that? The Wheels brother said, sweep around your own front door. Before you try to sweep around mine. Wow. Well, this is a good point for us to bring to a close. 3072, you know what? I don't know what I'm going to do without you. I'm going to cry right now because I don't want you to go. I know you want to leave me, but I refuse to let you go. And if I got
well, honey, you're going to have to let go tonight. Because I got to get to bed.
Pastor, you hear this, man? You hear this, Pastor? Well, you're going to drop it like a bad habit. No, we appreciate you joining us tonight. And just go and give us a final thought, then we'll let Pastor Wallace take us home for the evening.
I don't know. We just try to get to, you know, people one by one and try to encourage them in the right direction. And when they're wrong, like Pastor was saying, that sometimes the truth hurts, but in the easiest way we can deliver it, let's just deliver the truth.
And something you said is important. That is that people know we're not coming off as though we have been perfect or we were without some sort of fault, right? But our experience has taught us how to do better, and that's why we're encouraging you to do better. That's the spirit of which we should come. That's the spirit of which we should come. So thank you so much for that. We appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Pastor Waller.
Well said. Well said, 3072.
Thanks.
And I tell you, you know, the thing about experience, it'll teach you every time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, being able to acknowledge that experience is a great teacher, because had it not been for the experience, I would not know what not to do now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot of that going on. So when that takes place, then a person should become a good example.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the people need in our communities. We need good examples, because we do have a lot of bad ones.
And that's just
the way it's designed. The world needs more bad examples in order for it to be effective. It can be more effective when you got bad examples, because that's the system that one would have to be affiliated with. Because if you got a lot of good examples, you're not going to be affiliated with all those systems that cause you to be going through the channel of doing what they would call crime, that would cause you to be arrested. These are channels.
Mm.
And then you have to go before the people who go have you up there trying to discuss what they're going to do with you. Those are channels, man. And so it all has to do with that trap that I've talked about for many years that's still there. And so if we can be good examples, we can help those people miss the traps. And I thank God for what 3072 just said, Pastor Doctor. She said one person at a time, one community at a time, you know, things like that. Yeah, that means a lot, because that's what God's not turning back over to you. There's a man by the name of Pastor Cook. He was the pastor of the church that I attend today. And I never heard him say, when he was extending an invitation, I always heard him say, "Will there be one?" I never heard him say, "Will there be two?" He always said, "Will there be one?" You know?
Anyone.
And that's personal. You know, that is personal. And it can be 50 people to come.
Mm-hmm.
But
he
extended the invitation for one. That's very humble. Just in case there will be one person out here in the world that want to change their direction. I remember 3072 said one person at a time. That's good news. That's what we need more. And you said it best, and how we can get to that point, Pastor Doctor, you said in Matthew chapter 6, verse 33. You say, "Seek ye first the kingdom." If we can get that out there, and everything else is going to fall up under his righteousness, because that's why he says, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you." So you said it shall be added, right? That sounds like that's good news. We need that in the world. We need some good news out in the world, man. And I think it's going to happen. We keep on pushing one person at a time. And I enjoyed it tonight, man. I yield back to you on that note.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you, my co-host, Pastor Ricky Waller there, pastor and minister and executive director of New Way Outreach Ministry in Nashville, Tennessee. Double author, Still High, and The Flip Side. We thank you, and we thank our caller from Jacksonville, Florida. For each of you that joined us this weekend, you will join us in the future. And with that, we'll see you next Tuesday, Lord willing, at 7 o'clock p.m. Central Time for another episode of Talk Straight. Go in peace. And John Legend's going to finish out with "Wake Up, Everybody."
Wake up.
all the doctors say to old people, well, they're the ones who suffer, and we catch all the world. We don't have no bad thoughts before that judgment day. We want to make them happy before they pass away. Oh, yeah.
Wake up to all the children, how to build a land. I know we can do it if we feel better, hey. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. All the things will work out, cause they do every time.
Stay with me, stay with me. If you just let it long. Sing that too.